Everyone in the house, who got him? And it was funny because I was known for telling jokes and my nickname was Nizro, Navy SEAL Rob O'Neill. And they go, who got him? They go, Nizro. They go, fuck, we're never going to hear the end of this.
913, this is Power Europe. Team never quit. Team never quit radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. As always, thank you guys for listening and watching, and please don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button wherever you get your show. So today, before we get to our very special guest, let's kick it off with our weekly Patreon question. And this week, I think we've got a good one. So we've got, who would win in an arm wrestle, you or the person next to you?
That you're asking me,
between y'all two,
between me and Marcus.
Oh gosh!
I'm a righty, but I'm gonna preface this with a story that a lot of people don't know. I tore my bicep after the Navy, and it wasn't in combat, and it wasn't on a cool mission. I was bowling with my gay friend Joseph on his birthday, and I blasted my bicep. So I don't think I could beat Marcus in arm wrestling if I can't pick up a bowling ball.
Oh, gosh.
The surgeon was nice. He said, yeah, all the years of skydiving, the years of climbing and stuff and pulling on risers, it was just ready to pop, but it just happened to be at your gay friend's birthday party.
Well, have you ever watched those arm wrestling competitions?
Oh, yeah. And that's a lot of technique, too. Those dudes are legit.
There's a documentary called Pulling John. It's about John Brzink, and arm wrestling kind of gets into the history of it, but it's huge now. Remember Over the Top?
Oh, yeah. He turned the hat around.
Flipped that freaking hat around, switch, man. Yeah, he's flipping a switch.
Yeah.
Lincoln Hawk, right?
Yeah, right. They used to do the pull-ups on the semi. Not pull-ups.
Dude, he had the thing in the truck.
Uh-huh.
I watched that documentary on Pulling John a bunch. And the way they practice, I didn't realize how much technique went into that.
Oh, yeah, it does.
And the different grips. And then I was watching something the other day. I can't remember. Man, I'm going to screw up his name. I think it's Claggett, or forgive me for screwing that up, man. But the new arm wrestlers, this guy's a freaking, it was just like something over the top. This big Bull Hurley looking sumbitch came in bald headed and was kind of chest bumping him and everything. And he got in there with him.
Yeah.
And that guy started to pull on him and he just gave him the straight face. And then the smile and give him the look in the eyes like, look here, bitch.
It's about to go down. Yeah.
I mean, it was good. It was a good one, man.
You know what's taking over though is the slapping, the power slaps.
Oh, those are crazy.
Dude, that's intense. Dana White said it's going to be bigger than the UFC.
I heard him say that.
That I've never really been to one, or I've never paid to see one. But that's
okay. So you haven't been in there yet?
I haven't been to the slap, no.
Because you remember when we were growing up, or even now that we're adults, when someone slaps the shit out of somebody, I don't care how tough you are, if you get the shit slapped out, it makes that good noise.
Oh yeah,
it gets everyone's freaking attention.
I know some guys, that's their go-to if they get in a fight. They go to the power slap. You catch them in the neck.
Catch them in the neck. Yeah, right, you can knock them out. Dude. Yeah. God dang. It's some of them boys, you know, got those freaking the cinder blocks for grips, man. And they chalk up.
Oh, yeah.
How do
they flip a coin first? Bro, how do you know?
I don't know.
Because you're getting a hit from a pro. And they're hitting you right in the money. Like they're hitting the spot. They're hitting the magic spot.
It knocks people out.
Oh yeah, that's how
it does more than that.
That's how you win. That'll put you in the hospital,
dude.
That'll
freaking release everything in your body. It's like a superpower slap.
Hits you good enough, you can shit yourself. It's a pretty good.
That's right.
No interest in being involved.
No, I don't either. I don't.
I think we're at that. I kind of grew out of that phase in my life. I'm not trying to say that in a bad way. It's just like, you know, that happens. And we're UFC fans.
Oh yeah,
just freaking knew all the fighters.
I think it's great.
But I'm just having trouble getting my aggression back into watching.
Well, we were talking today. It's like, man, it's great to just wake up and stretch.
Stretch, yeah.
A good stretch.
Yeah.
don't need to kick anybody's ass.
We were talking about this. It's the easiest thing you can do. It's probably the most important, and no guy likes to do it.
No one wants to stretch, but that's Well, shit. I mean, Marcus today asked me, how old are you now? I was like 38. No, wait, 48.
I mean, he's sitting out there like it was nothing. 38.
38. He's like, what? That's you. Well, you look good. No, 48. Okay, you look bad.
Yeah, never mind.
But yeah, the stretch is good. But yeah, to answer your question, the arm wrestling, I don't know. I don't think I'm gonna try it.
Were you ever a big arm wrestler?
Like in high school, but nothing competitive. But again, too, it's with the technique.
I got buddies that are a couple of them. Mm-hmm. They got the big forearms and I never got into it.
No, but the power slap too. Then the
Hunter, you might beat both of them.
Hunter, you're an arm wrestler?
No, I'm joking.
Not professionally, but I mean, I'm coming. But I'm coming.
You my ass in arm wrestling. We'll have a talk.
Come on. I'm not scared. Well,
is that what they were looking for with that question?
Yeah. That's where he was going. You do realize, too, there is a thing called old man strength.
There is old man strength, and mine's kicked in 100%. And I knew the day it did. I saw it happen. But we do need an arm wrestling table in here. That would be.
That's a good arm wrestling table. Yeah. And then you got to need a bigger pillow for the patients to lay down when you're going to interview them.
Bro, that's a freaking good idea, man. Yeah. One of us should take it. How do you want to start this? How you want to play this one out?
Well, I mean, it's exciting because we're kind of combining, because I have a podcast as well, and mine is called The Operator.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I was explaining earlier the reason it's called The Operators, because if you're doing anything, you're operating. If you're managing a family, you know, if you're the manager at McDonald's, you're operating. And I used to be a special operator, and I do whatever I do now, and I tell you my opinion as an operator, and you tell it back. And also, Team Never Quit, Never Quit's a team guy thing, and I think I've signed that a couple times myself. And combining forces today for the greatest show on earth, I think. So am I right, Mel?
Yeah, for sure.
And that term, man, that label gets put on us now. That started back with the ladies. The original operators, right? Mm-hmm. They were the ones that would connect you with the world.
Oh, yeah.
Telephone operators.
The telephone operators. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's where that term came from, especially was for our generation. Mm-hmm. And that was the one lady you had to talk to if you want to get through anything.
She's plugging stuff in for you. It wasn't like...
So when you say that, man, we're not just talking about the guys because the women...
No. The original operator, yeah. And that's like, we're in an age now, we were talking about the power in your hand with the iPhones. Like, people nowadays wouldn't know how to use a rotary phone. They don't understand. Like there's not your phone. There's the phone, and there's the room with the phone, and you got the 20-foot cord that extends. Yeah. And your mom can strangle you with if she wanted to.
Yeah.
Whip your ass with it.
Mm-hmm. A lot of things that you can. You can
think
of
double.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The original operators, like, you have to call someone and they would connect you.
So we're doing a combined show today.
Yes.
We've got Rob O'Neill in the house. Came all the way from New York.
Right.
To Texas. For doing that.
Yeah, of course. Great flight, too.
And this show will actually release on the Operator episode.
Yes, we will.
And on TV.
All right, so we'll start out filling some questions that I always thought I would want to ask you, and then vice versa.
Yeah, and I didn't bring any notes, but I'm sure
it'll... I didn't either.
Good.
So let's make this kinetic.
This will be a blast, then, yeah.
All right, so we got the backstory of it. When did you sign up for BUDS?
When I tried to join the Marine Corps in 1995. Because it was time to leave town. Like, everyone gets to that moment, time to leave town. So I went to the Marine recruiter. He wasn't in the office, and the Navy guy was. And I went in there to talk to him. And I had a dude that I went to high school with, because I went to college for 1 year. He wanted to be a Ranger, but he didn't get it in writing. And he's the one that told me, whatever you sign, make sure you get it in writing. So I told the recruiter, I want to be a sniper. And he said, we have snipers in the Navy. Don't worry about the Marines. Got to be a SEAL first. Didn't know what that was, but I knew I wanted it in writing. So we had the Dive Farer program, which means...
Yeah, I remember it.
Yeah, I can go in. And he didn't tell me that you got to go in as a corpsman. I didn't know that part.
Is that what you started as?
Yeah, but when I got to boot camp, so I got a chance to try out for BUDS, and I passed the second try.
That happened to me, too.
But
they failed that. They failed me on the first one, sit-ups.
I failed push-ups. We had all those shots the day before. And cotton mouth and what, I just couldn't knock them out.
Dude, are you talking about boot camp?
Boot camp, yeah.
I forgot about boot camp itself, how bad that was, kind of brutal on some guys.
Yeah, the shots and everything was boot camp. But there was that time where you go to pick your rate, and for people who don't know, a rate in the Navy is your job, and all it is you go to the second floor of this building, and there's the corpsman room. And I decided, I don't want to be a corpsman. I'm going to find something else. And I just did. What's the shortest one? Well, PR. It's in Millington, Tennessee. It's like 2 weeks. You go right to BUDS after that. So I went there and said, hey, I'm here to be a PR. And they let me. I just kind of talked my way
in. What does that mean?
PR in the Navy stands for Aircrew Survival Equipment Man.
which has no PR. That's
military.
We do that.
They call them parachute riggers. But okay. So then I went to Millington. I learned how to sew from a huge black staff sergeant in the Marine Corps. He told, having a big man to kick your ass, teach you how to wind a bobbin, you realize there's some skill here. And that went there and then went to Buzz. But it was just, just joined Butte, Montana because it's time to leave town.
It wasn't as clear back in the day. Because when you say when we would pick our rate, it's actually your job.
It's your job.
And they ask you that question, you would think you would have put some thought into that. But no. Most people are like, hey, what do you got?
Shortest.
Just give me the short. Every team guy back then said that.
Yeah.
And back then it was Corman.
Except you, because you went in for the longest.
How did you get in? Let's hear that part.
So I started Navy SEALs movie, Charlie Sheen. Like, I feel like we're the Green Berets had Sylvester Stallone, mm-hmm. and we had Charlie Sheen.
Yes,
we do. If you want to know what GWAT SEALs act like, they act like Charlie Sheen.
Charlie Sheen.
That's the plainest way I can say that.
I got to show you. I have the original script from the movie Navy SEALs. Charlie Sheen sent it to me.
So I was going to wait to ask you questions like But you got a lot of cool shit.
And for my listeners who don't know, this is Melanie and Marcus Luttrell. And read a book. That's who they are.
So he got me pretty good. Like that movie fired me up. It got me so good that anything I could get my hands on back in the 1900s, was a magazine or the Rogue Warrior, or the books Rogue and all Warrior, that stuff. Mm-hmm. Even that movie.
It wasn't the 1900s. That would be the 1980s, 1990s.
Right. And Silver Strand.
He calls it the 1900s.
Oh, that it is. Because
the whole.
Yeah, 1900s.
Oh, you just made me feel really old. The 1900s back in the day.
That got dropped on me. Somebody said that to me personally, and I felt it. So I was like, okay, so I'm from a different time. Yeah, I am.
You realize that if we were Marty McFly, we'd go back to 1994?
How about that?
Holy balls. It's quick math, think. That's 30 years, right?
This is the kind of conversations you get in when we're on the road as much as we are. Like people just bring stuff up. I'm like, man, that's pretty good, dude. I never thought about it like that.
Yeah, he always says 1900s, and people are like, they associate 1900s with like 1910 or something.
Like how many people died of dysentery on the way out?
Right. When was the plague? But if you think about it, the 90s are the 1900s.
So back in the 1900s, what did you do?
I thought for some reason, and I didn't like violence or anything like that. This guy's a little bitty guy and stuff like that.
None of that seems true right now. I know,
it's all government work. Trust me, I took full advantage of it. But when they started talking about it was the hardest training, the people die, the teamwork environment and what they do, and just the way they were saying it, the way they delivered it, I felt that. Like, it completely changed the way I viewed everything. The way I started studying martial, anything I could do to get in there, what I thought, because we didn't have any information. Like, hey, study this, do this, run this, learn how to do this. And we just kind of, it was such a mystery back then.
I didn't know pull-ups were hard.
Bro.
I went to the park and tried to do pull-ups. I could do like one.
That is exactly when I found that out.
Look, I already signed the contract.
On the screening day, I always told myself, I was like, oh, hell, I can do pull-ups. Those are easy.
They're simple. Just pull yourself up. How hard is that?
They're not.
No. Especially with long arms.
That's hilarious.
You got the little guys.
Same thing happened to me, man. Yeah. I was like, I can, the run and swim, I'll have to gut that up. Pull-ups, no problem. Especially, and I've never done it all together. The screening test. I never put it all together.
Yeah, it that's a workout when you put it all together. It's, if you look at the individual, the 500 swim, 42 push-ups, I think, 8 pull-ups, maybe 6 pull-ups, 50 sit-ups, and then a mile and a half run in boondockers and dungarees.
That's right.
That was a workout, though.
Those freaking dungarees, man.
I was surprised how many dudes failed the swim. We must have, this is in boot camp, 200 dudes, and I think 2 of us passed the swim.
Wow.
What got you? What was tough on when you first got in?
I thought I'd be swimming because I didn't know how. And that actually, and even when I got to Buds, I thought, well, I'm not going to quit, but I'm going to fail swims, and that's what's going to do it. And then the mindset, I didn't have a good mindset at first. Who gave me a good mindset? Do you know Tom Donovan? He's an admiral now. He was an ensign. He was an ensign in my class, and he just got done with the academy.
Really?
Yeah. And that tells you that I'm
how about
least,
that?
You're at least 50.
I know.
But I went up to him, and just being a stupid kid, I'm an E2, he's an O1, and I said, this has got to be tough because, I'm scared now, but you're like in charge of stuff. You got to be really scared. He goes, what are you afraid of? I'm like, that's a good point. And that literally snapped me into, okay. And he's like, yeah, it's just a job for these guys. It's just a job for you. Okay, I guess I won't be scared. I'm probably going to fail a swim. Fear has nothing to do with it. And then on the swims, I always get this question. People will say, well, you're afraid a great white's going to eat you? I'm like, I'm not that lucky because I'll finish a 2-mile swim. He'll grab me, pull me 2 miles out, and make me do it again.
Yeah.
He's not just going to
You ask a Bud student if you're worried about getting eaten by a shark, they're like, I pray for it.
Please let it happen.
Please let me get a day off.
What an ending. I'm going to have a plaque.
Man, I'm a dude. Yeah, we swim around looking for sharks. We know where the slowest swimmer is in the damn line. Uh-huh. That's why we stay in line. Absolutely. That's a running joke. That's that hidden humor in Buds.
Yes.
Like those kind of questions.
Dark humor, yeah.
It's because that's it doesn't matter if the instructors are messing with you. Don't worry. So the system funny. Will. It just there's something designed in there to get a hold of you.
Well, yeah, the system's there, and the system works, and it's just the same numbers every time. And we know, I mean, knowing damn well from Mexico up to Oregon, there are great whites, and no one's ever been bothered. They don't bother you. They might laugh at you. They've seen us.
Oh,
yeah.
I've got the heebie-jeebie thing going a few. I remember distinctly a few times.
Well, because you were because in STV too.
Well, when we get out of that sucker, because it's always at night.
Yeah, of course.
And I don't care if you're in the pitch. If you walk into a pitch black room, shut the door, turn off the lights, it's pitch black in there, and sit there for a minute, you'll feel something in the room if it's in there.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
If there's another being in that room, eventually you'll pick it up, and that's the same way it is underwater. Especially if something's swimming past you, because there's those freaking bioluminescence would swing out sometimes, man.
And even if you see, like, a grouper scary underwater.
Oh, because everything's magnified.
Everything you see is a great white shark.
Did you, was first phase, when was your hell week?
Well, winter. No, it wasn't. Mine was a summer hell week. It was supposed to be winter.
Beat to death.
Yeah, well, they just beat you with everything. That's where you get the bald spots from the boats on your heads and all that stuff. And what's crazy about San Diego, even in the summer, being from Montana, I'm like, there's no way they can get me cold in San Diego. Yes, they can. I can get you as cold as I want. That bone chilling, to the bone cold. When you're shaking, you can't stop. It's not like this cold out. Like, this is misery.
And it's not as if they're sitting there going, oh, I'm not worried about when you get cold. It's him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I'm going after him. And I'll make that son of a bitch suffer in front of you until it passes down, right? That kind of deal. That's how they...
Oh, it's sympathetic.
Sympathetic detonation, man.
quitting's contagious, too. You get a dude to quit, and all of a sudden someone's looking at, well, that dude was tougher than me. I guess I can't. Bullshit.
That's the biggest sight, because the instructors feed off that like sharks.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as they get one, they'll start looking around at all the other guys, and they'll start feeding on that.
Yeah. What always bothered me, too, about speaking of SEAL movies is when someone goes to quit, and everyone's like, no, no, no. I'm like, go quit, dude. I don't need you.
Yeah.
Or you're so damn miserable, you don't even want to say nothing.
I'm not even wasting the energy.
Yeah.
One of Marcus's instructors and buds had just gotten a camcorder and took it to class, and Marcus, it was boats, right?
Mm-hmm.
Marcus, it was sitting under like a boat, like they had a little
treasure hunt
chance to sit or whatever, and he looks miserable. There's somebody sitting next to him, maybe two people.
It was a miserable time.
But there's old camcorder, and the instructor's walking up, and he goes, Marcus, your best friend just quit. You gonna quit? And Marcus looks up, and he goes, no, sir. I got more friends.
That did happen.
Well, they especially in Hell Week, your friends would just vanish.
Vanish.
And then I remember one guy that we said to each other, look, if you feel like quitting, just come find me and we'll talk it out. I ran into him the next day in the chow hall. I'm sweating and covered in everything. He's in dungarees. Like, you just quit. All right. I'd see you never saw him again in my life.
When was your Hell Week? What week?
Fifth.
Mine too.
Yeah.
That run week before really kicked the shit out of me.
Yeah, that was a different system, too. They might be smarter with it now because, I mean, it's a third week and you're not as beat
up.
My
brother was the first class.
What did
he say? Don't quote me. I'm almost positive he was the first third week class.
Mm-hmm.
He was 237.
You're just
237.
You're just fresher, but it's still hell week.
It's still hell week. That doesn't,
hell week. It could be first week. It's going to suck.
All it means is you just got your ass kicked in the third week. Yeah, that's all, until all fifth. It means. That's then, all then that means.
Week four is a walk week. That's all you mean. And then the first swim after hell week, I remember instructor Eshelman, we're in line to swim. First time after hell week. You've been kicked your ass by the ocean. And he walks by Eshelman and just goes, first time in the ocean since hell week. Kind of spooky, right, gents?
Yeah, dude. We had a guy quit because of hydrophobia. He wouldn't get back in.
After Hell Week?
After Hell Week.
He quit?
I'll never forget look on his face. You want to talk about a dead stare when he was staring at the abyss? It was like he could see Jaws in there and could hear the music. That kind of look, because it was real. I'll never forget him when that happened. We were doing swimmer inspection. I think it was Tuesday we do the 2 mile ocean swim. Tuesday? One of the instructors, we were out there and had the knives. You had your knurl nut, and he would walk around.
Remember that?
He'd grab everyone's knives, like, not sharp enough, and throw it over the berm. We were winter class. He was throwing them over the berms. Yeah. And then he made, that's when you go on and take off your wetsuit. He's like, go get wet and sandy. Put your wetsuit back on. Now get that dressed again.
That is so messed up.
Those swims, when they make you wet and sandy, then
you have to put sand and you're chafing now.
Yeah, and then it's...
That's rude. I've never seen
that. And the thing that always got me was how much pleasure they took in it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they were having a blast.
But it had happened to them. That's why it's...
Happened to them. You forget about that at the moment. And you know, if you and I were on that side, I'd have been hammering down, dude.
Easily.
Like the most ruthless. Well, that's why
the Smurf crew is always so tough.
Tough.
So the Smurf crew is the smallest dudes, shortest dudes, and you go by height. But... The shorter instructors were in the Smurf crew too. I'm going to make them pay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a vicious cycle. Like if you run into a tall Navy SEAL and a short Navy SEAL, you got to fight one, fight the tall guy. That small guy is.
Been the beat to death.
Yeah, you're going to have to kill
him. Been fucking beat to death. That's a real thing.
Yeah.
That's a real thing. They even got their bow. They got a Smurf on that, painted on the damn thing. Mm-hmm. And if they're too short, they'll put one was a coffee can under the tied a coffee
oh
can.
My gosh.
One kid had that tire. I've heard some good stories.
I did too. We had the dirty name, and that's a tough obstacle for short guys because you gotta get on a log, jump up, hit it, get on that, jump up, hit it with your chest. And I was talking to a guy the other day, and I was like, I think it might have been Will Branham. He wasn't in the Smurf crew, but I was like, what was the worst one? He goes, the dirty name. And I said something like, well, you're not short. And he goes, yeah, but I had broken ribs. I'm like, the stuff people put, when people quit buds, it's not because, well, this is hard. It's like, yeah. I'm tired of the broken foot. I'm tired of the shin splints.
Yeah, it's that kind of stuff.
I'm tired of my dislocated shoulder. I'm tired. But like guys like Will then, I think it was Will, but like I had broken ribs and you're doing the dirty game. You can't ask for a day off.
Oh, when this obstacle is so gnarly that the instructors park over there.
Oh, yeah.
That's where they park. And it's extremely entertaining to watch the new guys have to do this.
It is awesome to watch.
And you can hear ribs breaking. You ever hear a rib break? It's loud.
Oh,
and especially,
gosh.
They call it the dirty name because of what comes out of your mouth when it breaks your rib.
What?
That's how I got the name.
Yep. Hoo-yah logs and the dirty.
Freaking hoo-yah logs. Dude, I saw a guy flip off of that thing, and it caught him in the butt crack of the ass. And I mean, it folded him down. There was an instructor standing right there. And the kid finally got up. I mean, he almost was crying. And he goes, do I got to go back and do it again? And that instructor, without even missing a beat, goes, hell no, man. That was the coolest thing I've seen all day. You can go.
Oh, my gosh.
I love the Oak Course. I thought I was going to get failed for the balance logs.
Okay, I wasn't going to say that out loud.
I had
you
a hard
know
time
what,
with those things. I would try to run across them as fast as I could just to get over with.
I used to take two steps and jumped.
Because all you got to walk across these logs that can roll a little bit. Mm-mm.
You'd be surprised how bad that kick. Of course, the smart class, we go out there and try and wedge the log and do all that.
And like the instructors don't know that trick.
Yeah. It only worked quick. You didn't have to get past it. But I had an instructor actually teach me how to run the Oak Course.
That was nice.
It was, man. It was.
Wait, to pull you aside or did you?
Yeah.
Really?
There was four of us. There was three officers and me. I kind of got lucky with them. They were trying to keep the officers, the broken off. They were great. You know, they got busted up. So they keep those guys around. And I just had happened to wander into that crew, man. And he's like, come with me. And he taught me the trick to the weaver.
The weaver. Yep. I got instruction on that too.
Man.
The weaver's, you need to know technique on that.
You got to have your technique on the weaver, man. And of course, the commando climb and all that stuff like that. Because I was taller, I could rock and roll on that.
Yeah, I didn't mind that.
At all. And the dirty name, I could hit that with my feet.
The dirty name was simple. I enjoyed it. The balance logs and then the spider wall at the end just because forearm. Well,
I love the cargo net. I could slide down that son of a bitch, dude. And I
wouldn't even put feet on the damn thing. Just go down. Yeah, that was a great one.
Get in trouble for that.
Yeah, well, not
put your feet back in the net.
3 points of contact. We did have a dude sand dart off of that and off of the slide for life. They have a net under the slide for life now, don't they?
Okay, yes. But I heard if you fall into it, you're out.
Okay, that's good. That's fine.
When they told me that, I was
break your neck. Okay, that's fine.
I was totally cool with that when they said that. And I didn't know. That's a relatively new piece of information I got. That if they hit that net, they're out, which is fine. Because I had a guy, Conan Dunn was his name. And he looked like Conan. I'll never forget this dude. He fell from the top, hit the bottom. Instructors thought he was dead. He just stood up, shook it off, and was like, oh, and walked away. And then I think the next time we were running it, some kid fell and broke his arm and his pelvis. He had to hit one of the kickstand casts, and his mom was picking him up. That's how tough this dude was. That first from Conan.
Gosh,
he's a beast.
Yeah, and if he fell off, does that count? Like you pass?
Dude, they didn't go. He took it. He took the fall, man. He hit the ground and knocked the wind out of him.
Technically, he finished it.
Oh, yeah. We were just like scared to death. This is like back in the white shirt days when you didn't know what the hell was going on. People, you could climb the obstacles. And before you, I'd say before you get your brown shirt, really, there are parts of the obstacle that you're so tired, like your hands can just quit.
Well, because they make you go upside down instead of commando style.
Right.
And that burns your
guys
forms.
Are just freaking
just dropping.
Dropping, man.
I saw them out there with the white shirt stuff. An instructor thought this kid looked at him wrong. And he made him he made a bear crawl and low crawl from the L course to the ocean and back until he quit. Mm. And the only reason he quit is because like he physically broke him.
Yep.
Like his body was broken.
Gosh.
Yeah.
During Marcus's Buzz class, Dick Couch was following it and wrote a book about it.
Yes.
What was that called?
Warrior Elite.
The Warrior Elite. Yeah. I didn't realize that until just a couple of years ago. And I was looking through books in his office. I was like, this says class 228. And I sit down and read, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is about your Buds class.
There's literally documentation of my entire existence in the show. Yeah.
They that did crazy? That a couple of times. We had, they did one for the class, I think 206, and I was 208, maybe 205, right before us. And then they made them, this one sucked for me personally, they made the movie G.I. Jane.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so Demi Moore was out there right before we got there, and then her name was O'Neill.
No.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
I didn't hear about that at all. They didn't give me shit about that.
I happen to be a big Demi fan.
Yeah, I thought that was a fun movie.
I mean, I have no complaints about that lady pulling that off. I
thought it was pretty cool.
They I'm said, just saying.
Yeah, the only
she can do whatever she wants.
Completely far-fetched movie, and I love how they had him eating out of dumpsters. But people don't understand when Buds, they like one of the biggest problems is eating too much. Like, I want these five cheeseburgers, but we got a 4-mile run after
this. Yeah, we did have the best food.
Yeah.
They had everything in there, and the chow runs were your only break. There was a couple times we had to do the rush through, but for the most part, the way they kept us going was food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was good. Good eats.
And it was.
So what team did you go in after?
I went to SEAL Team 2. When
pick that?
Yeah, because when you're because the only thing going on was Bosnia, and that was their AO,
okay,
Air of Operation, and I kind of wanted to get into that. So, then the advice I got was pick a coast. So if you want two, pick 2, 4, and 8. Whatever you do, do not put SDV anywhere on your dream sheet because you're going.
Says it.
You're going there. And some of the guys, got talked into volunteering for SDV because they get free fall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you get free fall.
They definitely sweeten the deal with it.
But then you go to SDV.
How about those car salesmen? Used car salesmen to get you out there with that. Hey, I got some free fall over here for you, man. This is before everyone had it.
What does that mean?
To jump out of airplanes without
It was a good deal at the time.
Sweet deal. Just,
you get it because static line, you hook up to it and you do the army jump with the rounds, but free fall is like when you skydive.
Okay.
And they didn't give it to everybody. Yeah. Had to do at least
so
one
that's
for
how
two
they
usually.
Get. Okay, just real fast. I know what you're asking. That's how they get us. They bribe us with these schools to make us actually better, and it's sniper school, comm school, free. Yeah. And free fall was one of the biggest ones everyone wanted. If you were a young guy, you were definitely not getting it because there was guys who had been in the teams for 15 years that were waiting on a billet.
Still hadn't had it.
Yeah, this is before they created our own school for us.
Okay.
Yeah. That's way smarter now.
Correct. Absolutely. Yeah, we streamed.
Yeah, it was just a good deal. I think the big three when I went through were free fall, sniper, and comms. That's the three that you need. And then Breacher took over once the war started because then you got to breach everything.
Was Rudy the Master Chief there?
He had just left. I've got a good Rudy Bosch story because he was the CMC, the Command Master Chief, for 26 years.
No one knows that.
He wasn't in for 26 years. He was the Command Master Chief for 26 years, right? So when I got into SEAL Team 2.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And they have the Command Master Chief plaque. There's all the Master Chiefs. And up front is Rudy Bosch, like bigger than the plaque.
I mean, think about that. When they would come in and probably try to move him, he'd be like, I'm not going anywhere,
he's a
man.
Legend. People would come in, Master Chief, I have a question. What's that? Where's the barbershop? Roger that.
Check the watch, Bill.
I checked in on a Friday because I figured if I check in as a new guy on Friday, they won't notice. I'll have Monday to get my shit together come on Monday. And so I check in late, like right at Liberty Call. And they said, well, hey, all the guys are at the office. They want to see you. And the office is JB's. That's stopless go-go, not topless. It's stopless with the little things.
Oh, my gosh.
But they would say the office because guys say, yeah, we're going to the office after the work. And so I went there, and somebody said something about there was a guy there, a senior frog, and they said, go tell him you don't know who Rudy Bosch is. And I'm a new guy. I honestly didn't know. So I walked up to a drunk team guy and told him.
Oh, perfect.
And he'd been in team two for 12 years. And I said, I don't know who Rudy Bosch is. I'm one of your new guys. That was a long night.
Oh,
that's how you said that?
I didn't know what I was talking about.
Okay.
Because I went through buds with a guy named Bosch that didn't make it, and I thought it was his dad or something.
Oh. So did they get you wasted or what?
Oh, they beat the shit out of me. Literally, physically beat me.
Oh, my
they
God.
We do that. First. Hey,
and
man.
Then, we'll... And then the bad news was we're going to a house party at another, and that's where they start to beat you. So they beat up three of us.
Oh, my God.
You think we work hard? We play hard. And that, when I mean it, it's kind of like that stuff. Mm-hmm.
And you got to figure, these are seasoned team guys. They're all single, and they've been drinking all day.
All day.
So oh they're in the mood.
In the mood.
Yeah. The office. But yeah, Rudy Bosch, 26 years, then he was on Survivor. One of his great Survivor stories, too, because the dude Richard won and Rudy took second on the That's original right. Survivor. And then they made he made an action figure. And they said, that's a great Rudy Bosch doll. And he goes, that's an action figure, not a doll. Richard would make a doll.
God, that was great, funny. Man.
That legend. Well, there was another story about him. It was actually Patches Watson and Dick Marcinko.
He was great.
Both
all three
two.
Of them dudes, man.
And these are new guys to Rudy. And they're all Vietnam vets. But the thing, so the SEAL Team 2 thing was the Tuesday swim.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what the weather's like. We're
doesn't
doing
matter.
It first thing. But also then the game is, how do I get out of it? Like, do you always make your dental appointment on Tuesday or whatever? And the rule is, if you skip the Tuesday swim, you got to go to Waffle Town. It just, you have to do it rite of passage. So they skipped it somehow. And, went to Waffle Town, Patches and Marcinko, two legends. And they're driving back to Team 2, so this has got to be in the 70s. And they hear a radio competition, whatever, and one of them goes, oh, I know this. And they pull over, get a payphone, call. They win the damn contest as they're skipping the swim, not realizing Rudy's back in his office listening to the radio.
Oh, my yeah, so you're God. Getting-
That's how those mischiefs have that ultimate power, man.
They just know what you're doing.
It's like God randomly just redirects your mischief over straight into them suckers' ears. And once they come to – it's not the – hey, look, when the CO gets on you, that's one thing. When that sucker walks down on you.
The CO might be nice.
All Master over with. Master Chief, don't give a damn.
No.
Oh, my God. Freaking
kill you.
It's like you go into that dark room, pitch black, and there's a Master Chief in there, you're going to know it.
You're going to know it.
Right away. God, and it's not going to be quiet. Freaking...
How long were you at two?
I was at two for 6 years and then two at four, but that's when they switched. It was technically two with the same platoon, or 8 years at two with the same platoon. All we did was switch buildings for some reason. They had that Force 21 shit.
And remember when that came online?
Yeah.
There was a huge transition during our time.
All we did was, we grabbed our shit on one of those wheels, and we, like, guys from four wheeled past the guys from two, we just switched buildings. Yeah. And all we knew was Team 4 had the shitty building with the bad showers.
And Team 2 always had heard a better that, poor
building.
Four.
Yeah. And then Team 10 was just being built.
Getting built.
And on that one, everyone wanted to go to 10. A nice building.
Did you?
I would have, but I screened. I went across the street.
Oh.
Okay, so Team 10, we didn't have that. And 7, this is how you could bust somebody if they weren't real team guys. So there's a few questions you can ask us. And there's most team guys, now you can spot each other. And then there's a couple of questions you ask nonchalantly. And then back in the day, we didn't have a Team 7 and a Team 10. It's a relatively new phenomenon.
Right, yeah. It almost still sounds weird.
It still sounds... Thank you. Okay. I kind of had that feeling, too. Yeah. I was like, hey, man.
Is that a reserve team? No, they've been at war for 20 years.
And they'll always be the rookie teams, even though they're badass. They've been through everything until the other ones come online.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah, they... When they came up with... So at 6, there's the squadrons, red, blue, gold... red, blue, and gold were the originals, and they said we're getting a 4 squadron because Delta is 2. And this is typical team guy shit. They're like, well, what's it going to be called? And the dudes from gold team kept saying, oh, it's going to be silver, definitely. And we didn't realize they're fucking around. They're just saying it because silver's not quite as good as gold.
Yeah.
And it became silver.
Silver.
Yeah. Oh, just because of a team guy starting to joke. So now they're silver. I was
at
silver.
Like that's how most things in the military get established is something like that. You can bet if you nut and bolt it all the way down to the bottom, it's two guys freaking going at it about what should we do or how are we going to do this.
Yeah.
So what year did you screen?
I screened in 2002, and I went over in 2004.
Wow.
Yeah, so it took a while. That's an interesting process, too, because the most fun is the – well, not fun, but you go to an oral board, and it's all E8s and E9s, and they're all over there, and it's a shitty job interview where I'm on this side and 12 of these dudes – and there's one yeoman, and the yeoman's job is to go through your service record and go through your medals as you're sitting there, and God forbid you screwed anything up.
Mm.
And then they just ask you questions, and then what they do is they don't take your bio, they take your picture. They go to what we call the second deck, which is where the teams are, and they hand your picture around. And all I want is a thumbs up or a thumbs down from you. And if I've seen you at JB's, and Uh-oh. You might not even get a screen.
Yeah, I always heard that.
Yeah. What?
Yeah. Good play. Which your first team was on the West Coast, wasn't it?
SDV.
I got sent straight to the island. Straight out to Hawaii.
Yeah, it was SDV.
Yeah, SDV.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Sure did.
Now, how did that happen? Because I've never heard...
Bro, that's a freaking awesome story.
Because, I mean, you don't look like you belong in a sealed delivery vehicle.
No.
You're a little
Thank
tall.
You. Yeah. I'll never forget sitting in second phase when the dream sheets were getting passed out. They're like, hey, where you guys want to go? And then they had a team guy from each team...
No shit.
...come into the room and tell us about what their SEAL team was like. It's almost like a fraternity rushing thing, right? Only it's switched around. And they freaking... I think it was Instructor Calvin drew a huge dick on the freaking whiteboard with two guys riding it. He goes, "When you guys get sent out to SDV, that's what it is." That's what he said. And like everybody avoided that team. Like just heard you shouldn't want to go out there. It's the hardest SEAL team there is.
Yeah. I mean, even in Hawaii.
That's beautiful. Man. And it's beautiful
but
out there.
But you have to understand, Rob, you would know some of these guys. I mean, Marcus was in SDV with Garrett Golden.
Yes.
Corey Hull.
Okay, yeah. So that's
these are some big dudes.
Like these are.
I was one of the shortest and smallest guys in one of my platoons.
Garrett Golden's a big dude.
These are he's ginormous guys.
Yeah.
And they have to cram into this tuna can in the dark.
So when I found out I was getting sent out there, I was actually at Bragg. I was at Fort Bragg with the Army. I was cross-training as a medic. I was a corpsman. Yeah. So for those
Delta.
Of you who don't know, SEAL medics are actually Green Beret trained. Mm-hmm. We're not Navy trained. So I'm not actually a corpsman. I'm a medical.
Great point.
Yep.
18 Delta.
18 Delta. Thank you. We were all, I mean, the whole battalion was sitting out in front of I can't even speak Army, listen to that, was sitting out in front of the schoolhouse, and the SEAL instructors were coming out. We were fixing to go do PT, and they're like, "Hey, all you SEAL pups, check it out." He goes, we got your teams in here. And they started going through the list. Downs, you're going to three, freaking team one. You know, they started listening, and they go, "Latrell." And I was like, "Hoo-yah." Like, where do you think you're going?
Oh, no, don't start with that question.
And I go, five? I go, five? And they go, tell again. And I was like, how about three? And they were like, nope. But it has three letters.
Oh, no.
And I go, dev group?
EOD?
I hit him with the dev group, and the dude goes, drop down, smart ass. Dev group.
Oh.
He goes, you wish. He goes, you wish, drop down, smart ass. And I was like, all right. And they go, SDVs. And I was like, sweet. Is it at least Virginia? And they're like, Hawaii, aloha, motherfucker. And then that was it. And I was like, Roger.
Now, is that a better deal? Because, I mean, Virginia, they had an SDV team out there. And for everyone who doesn't know, can you explain what an SDV is?
So it's, imagine, I want to stay away from it. It's a mini submarine. Take a submarine and shrink it down. Only the difference between a submarine is it's dry inside and you can move around. And the SDV is completely full of water.
I feel like that's not really a good way to say it, because the submarine is so huge that you think a mini would still be big.
Yeah, this one's about the size of two golf carts.
This is small. Ugh. This is a tiny, tiny vehicle.
Or two of your large TVs in your house. Imagine cramming a bunch of us in there. And like I said, when I got to out there, they were pulling guys. And my first platoon and my sister platoon, I was one of the smallest guys there. Freaking animals, man.
How did they work that? Who came up with that?
So I think somebody got pissed off at the recruiter, and they just started sending, I mean, from our chiefs down. Everyone was giants out there. And we had the best time. We're stuck on that island with each other.
That's the good part.
Bro, surf PT.
Yeah, good.
Board shorts and button-down shirts and flip-flops, man. That was uniform.
But so you've got, like, you got the two dudes in front that are driving and navigating.
Yeah.
And then how many, six guys or four guys in the back?
Dude, it's...
But you're not doing anything. You're just sitting there freezing.
Talk about ultimate torture.
Yeah.
I tell people, if you got one of those deep freezers in your garage, like your grandma, the big white suckers, fill that sucker full of water, crawl in there and sit down for 8 hours.
Oh.
That's what some of those dives feel like.
And that was
not
another...
only get in there with about four dudes. All your armor, all your gear, everything. All your kit, all your rifles, probably weighing about 300 pounds when I'd climb in there. And I mean, You want to talk about getting in touch with your with the inside, because it's completely dark. It's underwater.
You're meditating and freezing. Meditating,
yep. In that freezing cold water. So they all this cold plunge.
You can't even move to stay warm.
You can't. You can't move. Just because if you move, you're pushing somebody else.
You're hooking them up.
And you're hooking them up.
Blue Falcon the shit out.
And then you don't want to get in a fist fight underwater in the back of that thing.
It'll happen. And then you're yelling at each other and Dregger.
In the pitch blackness, the only thing you can see every hour is there's a little bitty red lens light that comes on. And that's all that is to see if we're alive. And then we hit the button back, and there's one up front that it pings off, just like a little red lens light, and it lets them know that we're
alive. Every hour.
For every hour. Yep. And that's all you get to see.
Well, because you're down there for like 8 hours, right?
I think the longest one that I ever ran across, and it wasn't me personally, I didn't do this, was 14 hours underwater.
I've heard that.
Yeah, 14. And them dudes were hard.
Why don't we simulate it? Like, let's just simulate you're in here for 10 hours. Because if we have to at war, I can do it. I don't need to train that.
Okay, so that's...
Did anyone bring that up?
That was the new guy complaint of the day.
Well, it's smart.
Smart, yeah, absolutely.
But the old guys have done it, so, okay.
The point, the only thing, and, you know, obviously lessons learned. So when we would say that, then the chief's like, okay, get your gear ready, harvester, balance your rucks, and let me see you do it. And then something would go wrong in there. Like, it doesn't even have anything to do with us.
Yep.
And then they're like,
see, this is why.
And there's no argument to that. Because SEALs go after every variable. And you're like, God, that's why we get so focused on this stuff. It's like, and why do y'all think about that stuff? It's like, man, we got taught to do that. We just got taught to do that. Not miss anything. Because underwater, you'll die so fast.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard somebody, they were talking to me about the GWAT war with Afghanistan and Iraq. I was like, you know, that's not even our specialty. We're waterborne.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, we're just thankful that the Marine Corps and Army let us play in your war.
That's actually a great point.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're not even supposed to be there.
Now, in your defense, though, what a lot of people don't know is SDV actually has probably the best recon surveillance in the Navy.
Yeah, hands down, period.
Top in the military.
Yep.
And a lot of people don't know that because they've brought up Red Wings. Why was SDV up there? It's like, these are some of the best snipers we got.
Yeah. Reconnaissance platform, eyes on.
But no, but a lot of people don't know that.
And we're I know people here. We'll set some records straight. SEAL Team 6, the best there is.
Yes,
but I challenge anybody to walk up to any SEAL and say which one is the hardest freaking SEAL team out there.
SDV is the hardest, the most hardcore team you can go to. It's so hardcore, Navy SEALs don't want to go. It's that bad.
Thank you.
But again,
set the record straight on that.
And also,
he's like Mike.
And also, SDV is honestly one of the teams that has most of the classified shit too.
Now, yeah.
And people don't know it. Like our shit, you just know it. But like, we had a dude come to Red Squadron at SEAL Team 6. He had a Silver Star, and I said, "Oh, is that from Iraq or Afghanistan?" He goes, "Nope." I'm like, "What have you been up to?" And it's like, "Well, you know, but there's other stuff."
Walk down the hallway. See what's on the walls, because we don't do it by individuality.
No.
That's not how we get awarded. We get awarded from, it has to be a big thing.
What do you do in the back for 8 hours?
Okay, so the first couple times when they put me in there, because I was a smaller one, so they would put me up my back against the canopy and put the bigger guys in front of me. And then
your first year, bro...
They were trying to put me in that freaking boat one time, and the guy, the instructor put his foot on my throat, pushed me into the damn boat.
Oh God!
Closed the canopy over my head. My right arm was behind me and had my hand on my spare regulator in case the one in my face got pulled out, which happened all the time because the guys in front would move.
Yeah,
that's why you can't move. You have to sit perfectly still. Take their source out. Because any part of your gear reaches up and grabs my air source and pulls it out of my mouth, it's so dark in there, and I can't move to get something. That's physically impossible.
That's crazy.
It's the most terrifying thing you've ever. If you're claustrophobic, if you're scared of the dark, scared of shit in the water, which I was, this is where they sent me to get over that. And I'm talking about, I spent more time in that tube. And then the funny part about it is when God pulled me out from underneath the water, he put me in another tube in a plane, millions of miles doing all that. Oh. It's like, I couldn't believe it. So the first time I got in there, I was terrified. And it took about a year to get over that, thinking like, I'm going to die. And then you get to the second year, it's like, so what if I die? And then the third year is like, please let me die.
Please let me die.
And then the fourth year, you don't care. And then the fifth one, you're a badass. And that's kind of the cycle, man. And everyone's like, how do you guys keep getting back in there? I was like, because that dude right there does.
Yeah. That's what it is, too. That's why I fought for the guy next to me.
Because that son of I like him so much, dude. And I tell you what, during the sub-ops, and we got to see things that there's no way any other human being on the planet of Earth would have been able to see it unless you do that job. Because when the sub would leave us out in the middle of the ocean, I mean, when I'm out in the middle of the ocean.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, and it was pitch black, but there'd be a full moon coming down, and you could see that hitting the water. And we'd just be out there floating, the six of us in the middle of the drink, thousands of miles from anywhere, waiting on that submarine to come find us. And when you're in a position like that, it's like being on a foreign planet with things swimming around that can kill you. And we're all we had. And it was one of those, hey, bro, I freaking love you moments, man. I'm like, yeah, just wanted to tell you that.
How funny is it if you think about that? Stuff that people are afraid of. Claustrophobia, the ocean, water drowning, and pitch black.
Sharks.
Sharks. You know, just the fear of the ocean itself. So you're claustrophobic, but now you're in a spot where, okay, at least the water's 5,000 feet deep here and it's dark.
Right.
You don't know what's below you.
And you don't have any idea what's down. You can't see it. People are like, what if you get hit by a shark? Don't worry. You won't know.
You have no idea.
You won't freaking know, man.
No.
We're talking about ultimate predators in their arena.
Yeah. These are apex.
So I used to have a reoccurring nightmare when I was a boy. I was on the Titanic. And the when the ship broke in half, the propeller coming out down.
Yeah, remember that.
That used to give me the freakouts. And the first time we had to swim up on a live ship in second phase when they did that to us, that in the daytime during the fam, I was fine. But when we went up there at night and you see the demarcation line of what you think is black, like when you stick your hand into what dark, I'm not talking about black, I'm talking about darkness. And there's the noise from the ships. There's 5,000 gallons being sucked. Dude, I mean, you really cling to your buddy. You're like, hey, hey, man, are you sure? This is our job?
Yeah.
On TV, it looks cool. But when you're down there in that shit, I mean, you're this little bitty thing where everything around you is designed to kill, not even kill us. It doesn't matter if you get in its way. It doesn't care.
Well, and it doesn't seem like it would be legal to do something like that. Like, this is obviously putting my life in extreme danger.
I don't think you realize at the time because you're with your buddies and everyone's just doing it.
Yeah.
And then you get so scared when you're in there, you want to get out of there, but you can't come back with empty handed like you didn't do your job. So you stay in there until you get it done because the reward when you get out is them guys standing there going, good job.
Yeah, that's the reward.
That's the reward.
I've heard stories of dudes too, just not in the SDV, but on combat dives when you got your compass and everything. When we do ship hull fams or whatever, getting under those big ships. I did a dive on the USS Iowa, which is a battleship from World War II, and then the Saratoga carries next to it. You get under there, and this is in the daytime, and your compass just starts to go because of all the metal. And if you don't know how to follow seams, you get stuck under there, and you're going to run out of air.
So kind of join the SEAL team so I wouldn't have to do math?
Yeah, there's no math in
diving. Engineering?
Yeah.
Especially, you know, in some kind of hardcore capacity to where you had to know how long a seam or a strut was.
You better know.
But then when I got into the SEAL teams, it was exactly what I had to know. Not only that, I had to do it underwater.
Yeah.
In the pitch black. So you're feeling and you're counting these things. And if you get turned around under some of our boats, you'll die because you don't have enough air to get out.
Yeah.
How about that?
And
you go in there. Before we go underneath the boat, you look at your buddy and our depth gauge or our pressure gauges are right on our chest. Mm-hmm. And he looks at you and he's like, good to go. And JJ used to look at me all the time and be like, I don't know, man. You might not make it.
Oh, my gosh.
And then you go. And then you, yeah, he'd do that to me. And then you go. And if you die, man, we both die.
And the thing, too, is because if you're breathing straight oxygen, the more adrenaline you get, the faster you suck it down.
God.
And if you're it's like, well, how exact do I need to be on these seams? I don't know. How bad do you want to see your parents again?
That's it.
What? Oh, my God.
And let me tell you what happens when you breathe that rig too hard. You get to it. Okay, so that's exactly what happens. You get so excited that it pressure your breath starts to pick up, and that rig is designed to kill us when you do it that fast. Like, you'll get into this breathing pattern, and it'll make you breathe till you die.
It's a sweet gig.
They call it a Widowmaker. How about that? And we put that damn thing on every day.
Every day. One of my favorite things, though, once I got to the elite position of diving supervisor, I was able to stand out there, and what you have to do is you give people their checks before they get in. And when you're breathing straight oxygen, because it goes out at an exhalation, it goes through a scrubber, softened lime, or sodasorb, comes back up as O2, so you breathe it. But in order to get pure O2, you need to purge out the nitrogen. So you have guys stand there, they're swim buddies, and you inhale, and you have your mask on, exhale through your nose, it comes out your mask.
You have to breathe it out.
You have to breathe it all out. And then, so now you're done, and you're going to be finning in the complete quiet for the next 4 hours. And so what I would do to guys, I check them out, everything's good, and go, all right, guys, you're going to have a good dive. Oh, real quick, rising up, push him in. Yeah. So they're singing Eye of the Tiger for 4 hours.
Oh my gosh.
Just spinning. And you can't stop. And then you argue with
your... Let me tell you something. You can hear them doing that.
Yes.
Underwater, that's what you can hear. And you can, I mean, I've seen guys...
When you argue with each
other. You can hear them saying, shut, quit humming that damn song. I'm going to turn pitch black water. You can't see the dude. And you're actually touching him. And but you can't see him.
That's so funny.
Yeah. And you got... When you're diving to, not in the STV, because I've never done that, but when you're going up on a ship that's docked, the closer you get, you can hear the barnacles clicking. And, and you can, again, it's like being in a place where you can tell something's there. You're swimming up on a huge-ass ship. And then as the driver, you keep you locked in, and you're staring at a depth gauge and the compass counting your kicks, because you can't use GPS down there. And so you're doing all this shit, and the guy above you now, he's got to put a hand above you and his hand out, because he's going to protect you.
He's the one reaching. He has to reach into
stuff. But now you're swimming like this, hauling ass, hydrodynamic. This asshole's up here trying to... And so you're like doing this number, and you got to make sure he doesn't hit the ship.
Yep.
And I've done it before where I kind of slip up, and all of a sudden he goes head first into a Navy
ship. You can hear that too, man. And then he yells,
then he yells at you.
That is terrifying.
But it's silent. There's no air. So even the fish, they just think you're a clumsy fish because they're scared of the sometimes.
Oh, they'll sneak up on them all the time.
Terrifying.
That was one of the coolest things when we got good enough to do that, when you could sneak up on fish.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just thought we were a part of the system down there.
So what was Hawaii normal day at work? What was that like?
It was awesome. We used to wake up 5:30, 6 o'clock, roll in at six, start seven, but you had PT in the morning until 10.
Mm-hmm.
So you had, and you had to do it.
And then could you do your own thing?
Throughout the week, it separated. So in the first one would be a run. You could do it by yourself. Then Tuesday, we'd all do it together. We'd have ocean swims. So who we got Fridays, you'd have to swim around Ford Island, where Pearl Harbor happened. And then we'd have to do the 13-mile IA loop run. And that was your who
that's got. Legit.
Yeah, it was legit.
That's a cool workout,
though. It is. Probably the most in shape I ever was. Because then we had to play water polo certain days.
Uh-huh.
And then underwater we played hockey. Underwater hockey in the 10, 15, and 20-foot sections. Mm-hmm. Then we had weighted volleyball.
I didn't play that. That sounds cool.
We had to play I would always get – and the runs. Big on running, man.
Yeah.
Out there. And then, obviously, the gym. Guys usually with the workout you had to do with the team in the morning, and then the evening PT was on your own kind of deal, expected to go in there. And then it was on an island, so all the single enlisted guys, we just had each other.
Where do you go?
In the downtown.
Okay.
Here we go down to Waikiki.
I used to like Duke's.
That's where we start.
Yeah,
that's every new. Well, that's your hunting ground right there, Pods.
Uh-huh. I know.
There's your hunting ground right there.
Duke's, and then there was a spot in an alley called Fatty's Chinese Kitchen.
Yeah.
That was a good spot, too.
And then the Country Western Bar, they actually had one called Nashville's, and that sucker was open till 4 a.m., bro.
That's the last thing I need.
Absolutely.
I went out there one time. We did a pretty cool training mission where we took a private jet to jump out of and then get in. We landed private jet. We had our suitcases were with our parachutes. We got on a puddle jumper and then flew. But then we jumped out of that and linked up with the boat and whatever. But we got to hang out in Hawaii. But it's the only time I saw the SEV. So, it's a cool place.
It's a great place.
It is. I mean, to be stationed out there, because we got to do. I tell you what sucked is when we had to leave to train because it was so far to anywhere.
Yeah. What would you C-130s?
Yeah.
Oh,
can you believe that?
No.
Dude, we'd have to dirty Herc it all the way back to California and Guam sometimes. But then we started going to the other islands. And then when you guys would come into town, that we could play with y'all. And for the most part, we had Marines up at Schofield and the Army and the Air Force bases. But our training was so intense. The dive phase was eight weeks long, and that was all SDV intensive.
Yeah.
Just getting ready for it. And then you'd go into months of that, and then we'd have to do the backfill with the CQC, and then the wars kind of dictated. Once we find out kind of where we were going, then they drop us into that training block.
Mm-hmm.
But because we are a waterborne platform, they always made sure we were ripe on that.
Good, yeah. Well, that's what we were too.
And guys would bitch about it, but then now when you're at our age and you look back at it, I'm glad. Like, you see the skippers actually know what they're doing.
Yes.
And you take that for kind of granted when you're a young kid, because you don't give a damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the old man. I mean,
what's he, like 70? What does he know?
Yeah, knows everything. I'm just doing my thing, you know what I mean?
He knows everything, and he's only 38.
Yeah, and out there, when I got to SUVs, we had the best skippers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were freaking hardcore. When I checked on it, was Thompson.
Okay.
And he had a reputation for being, we're going to dive after church, we're going to die on Saturday, you know, all that. And then Losi came in, and DeGhetto, and just the lineup out there. You'd walk around every platoon, all the chiefs, you could just, and then they slipped us some dev group guys into training, when, especially when 9/11 hit.
Yeah.
I mean, this is when we really started
doing
all that reconnaissance. Well, you guys got y'all's deal. Mm-hmm. Once kind of orders came down and what your job was, like staying in your lane, and they were like, well, obviously you guys are reconnaissance.
Right.
We started hitting that hard. They would take us to the Big Island to simulate Afghanistan, and the Big Island was worse.
Is it really?
Man, it whipped through. They drop us off in those volcanoes.
Mm-hmm.
This one helicopter, I don't know how she did it. I'll never forget. I didn't know her name, but she was a 60 pilot. She landed inside this lava rock off the side of the volcano. I don't know how she, we still to this day don't know how she landed in there. And they dropped us in there, bro. We're in for fucking 4 hours trying to get out.
Gosh.
Guys were so mad. Her rucks were about 100 pounds. Guys were so mad. They were like, leave it. Just go. Somebody get in a fight.
What's the, because the mountains in Afghanistan are no joke. What's the difference in like texture as far as.
So it was that difference between that porous rock, which you can't slide down. Like you can't touch that without, it'll rip your gloves right off kind of deal. So it's, that's that real slow movement. When in Afghanistan, you know, once you get good at bounding, then you can move. Once you know how to move, like billy goat wise, see those mountains and you can get it. The lava rock's a little different.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because it cuts everything. It's just every edge is a sharp kind of deal.
Oh,
so
it just sucks.
It sucked.
You know what I noticed too? Well, like you said with the water stuff, like we always were training on the hostage rescue at sea type stuff, which is who else is going to do it? Like that's our thing. So we do it a lot and we train it. We'd never done it before. 1980 till 2009. It hadn't been done one time. And we'd been training up on it. And what we really realized on the Captain Phillips rescue was the training scars. Because you do stuff like this is the way we've always done it. If you don't do it for real, there's safety aspect. And I think we get a little too safe in training sometimes. You need to put
absolutely.
It out there. One of the things I noticed, though, other than the shitter got full on the flight over because they put one shitter in a C-17, and that's a different story. But I was the lead jumper on that.
Those are the best parts of the story, though.
That's a great point. I can tell that story if you want. But when we got there, because we jump off the coast of North Carolina all the time. And there's safety boats on the drop zone on each corner, and they're spinning so you can see the water being churned up. This is our drop zone. We jumped out because we sent the boats out, and then we did a racetrack, and then I'm the lead jumper. I jumped out. There were no safety boats, and I couldn't find anything. So that's
different.
Need to find those H sacks there, and it's a day jump.
Yeah.
So there's a glare of the sun. That's how you need to train. No safety boats. Put the boat or have the boats out there, and you jump and find them on the way down. And you've only got about 5,000 feet to find them.
No, you said something good. I'm like, hey man, safety will kill you.
Yeah, there you go. That's brilliant.
Safety, and it sure will. I never thought about it till you said it like that, man. But look, there's stuff that happens to us out there. Yeah. The safety boats safety gets in the way of it. How'd you hear about Dev Group?
I heard about it because when we first got in, we heard it had been decommissioned as a new guy.
It was six then.
Six was decommissioned, but we didn't know much about Dev Group. But the dudes, because it was before we had our own training departments, there wasn't TradeIt. And there was the more senior.
So you had a Trident board too. You had a Trident. I was the last one to have one.
Yeah, I had a Trident board.
Me too.
That was a funny one. We had the training department, and it was always the senior guys that would lead the PTs, and they were in kick ass shape.
Yeah.
Because they're training for green team for selection, and then they would just vanish, and then it's like, okay, those guys are going over six.
How about that? Even in our community, man, guys,
we didn't even know.
They would just vanish over to that team, and really never see them again.
Never see them again. And the ones you did too, the guys that didn't make it. That's what made it a hard choice because it's like, well,
oh yeah, if you didn't make it,
if I don't make it, I'm known as a guy that didn't make it.
That's a thing.
Yeah,
we keep track of that.
I know.
We,
you take your Trident and you bet I can make it. Basically, not. I mean, and guys, there. Are
no,
guys
that's
that,
what that is.
There are guys that don't make it. And they're great guys. That's fine. But it's
you know why that hurts? Because that's what they say to us when you don't make it through Buds.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of great dudes. Doesn't mean they need to be SEALs. Like there's a lot of great SEALs.
I guess so, but I mean, well, green team's funny because it takes one bad run. You could be having. I remember,
God, dude. I always heard that, man.
I was having one of the best. CQB is the hardest part of green team. I
always heard that too.
And like you do runs all day, then you do house runs all day. They eat chow, and then you go to the range. Next day you go to the range, eat chow, do runs, and you do six runs maybe. And I'm like having the best day of my life. I'm like, I got this. I got the cover your guys back, angle man, corner boy. All this stuff is great. And then I remember I went from having the best day of my life to they had me carrying a broom because I'm so unsafe. And I don't even know what the hell I did. It's one of those things where they invented a mistake that you didn't do, but they punished you for it. And the whole point is now you're carrying a broom today.
Yeah.
And the whole point of that is, can you get over it?
What? They're just team guys can fuck with you, yeah. dude. I mean,
and it's like, you didn't even screw up, but we're punishing you.
Yeah, it's like being back in buds.
But they get you in your head. Like, what did I do wrong?
It's like failing room inspection.
The fucking room inspections are hilarious. But at the time, you take it so serious.
I thought that was the end of the earth if we failed anything.
Yeah, no, you're going to fail it.
You got to understand, when that mentality in buds, when I would look at those SEAL instructors, they were the most lethal, smartest men on the planet.
Yep.
You didn't talk back to them. Nope. You didn't want to be their friend. I wanted to be like them, but I was intimidated to ask them questions. Anytime they came around, you knew they were going to throw you a beating.
Anytime.
So, anytime. Anytime you see one of them, even out of your peripheral, they were looking to throw you, toss you a beating, man.
I'd see them out in town and be afraid of them. I'd run across the street. I don't want to walk in front of that guy. But the room inspection is like, when you look back on it now, it's like you failed me for sand on the ceiling. Like, come on.
What'd you fail for? I had water in my toilet.
Yeah.
You know,
well, they come in with hands full of sand.
Hands full of sand.
Well, I remember the dudes too, like they would spend all weekend cleaning that room, stripping and waxing. Buffing and waxing, but it's like, dude,
like they were rebuilding it.
Have a good weekend. You're gonna fail. Take your ass whipping on Monday and get over it.
I saw one time this kid. He was like that, so meticulous on his boots and everything. And they actually passed him one time. One time. His roommate quit first phase or something like that, man. And we always ask, like, why do you up in the middle like 3 a.m. still in there doing that room cleaning? You know, and he's like, I don't know, man. It's just I do that.
That's the way I do it.
It's the way to do it.
Yeah.
Like every guy's different. That's what you see.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's what you see there.
Did you have a theory on that place called AB Brights? Was that around?
Is it still around?
I don't think so. I think, but someone had it in there because that's where they sent everyone down there. The AB Brights is a place
you had to go.
And you had to go there to get your every Stars uniforms.
Team guy had to own that, right?
Something. Someone's getting a cut.
Somebody got some kickback for that. Because
it seemed like they were charging a little
extra.
The
van would show up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Into the main compound.
So they're getting something. They're getting
when free. No one else is allowed into the compound, this freaking van.
AB Brights can roll up, yeah.
Damn
or,
right.
Or someone just hitting one
Did
of
Did you
guys
have greens or camouflage?
Greens.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, the greens were... That was another rite of passage, too, I think, too. Because I think camis are easier.
That's how you knew the third phase boys.
Oh, yeah, they're the camis. That's right.
Yes, they brown switched to the camis. The brown shirts and the camis.
Even back then, I thought those were the cool guys.
Cool guys.
It's like, you don't know shit, dude.
Isn't that funny, dude? Yeah. If a third phase guy rolled up down the road, you'd be like, oh, shit,
yep.
There's a red helmet. That guy must be he's an awesome.
He must be the best ever.
Best ever.
Not like me, the second best Navy SEAL ever.
Yeah. Isn't that great? That's probably the best line.
Marcus was telling me today about, hey, were you the greatest SEAL ever? Nope, second best ever.
I'm the second best SEAL there ever was.
That gets just out of so many things. You're going to hear me use that now.
Yeah, dude. Use it. You're welcome to it, man. Anytime I need to defuse a team guy, I hit him with that. Because you know our boys, man. They can beat on your chest, man.
But we were saying, too, earlier, this intriguing was safety will get you killed. That is true.
Yeah, I never heard it said like that to you. Put it out there, but that's a great way to do it. And now what happened was I started thinking about all the safety stuff that we go through, certain pipelines. I'm like, man, some of that stuff got in the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, happened to that first gunfight. Prime example of what I'm trying to talk about is like I was trying to jam my mags down my shirt instead of fighting.
Because of a training scar.
Training, yeah.
We used to do that, didn't we?
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
That was in one of my debriefing points when the Air Force pulled me in and did my JP-8 debrief.
Yeah.
They're like, what were your lessons learned when I was going through SEER, when the SEER guys got me? And I was like, I'll never forget in that valley trying to shoot and then changing a mag and trying to put it down my shirt. And there were so many mags already in my shirt. I had it because my blouse tucked into my pants, right? Mm-hmm. So we were always taught to jam down.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I was trying to jam a mag in and it wouldn't go in because the other ones were getting in the way instead of actually going online. And in my head during all that, I go, what the? Why am I trying to do this?
Yeah.
And I pulled my blouse out, dropped all my mags. And can you believe that?
Yeah, I can.
And you wouldn't even know that until you got into that situation.
That's the muscle memory of training. That's the whole thing. Even on a static range, when you do a mag change or you drop a mag, you don't grab it. You just leave it there. You got to get the gun up. Even in a gunfight, if a buddy's hit, you got to win the fight first.
Yeah.
I mean, that
has to be taught.
Yeah.
Don't worry about that sucker on the ground. If he falls right in front, so what?
Yeah, you got
to
win.
You ass better keep going.
You're
going
to be next to him.
Yeah. Because if he tries to get up in the middle of all of us, man, we're all going down.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That had my Hilo lanyard got caught up one time and pulled me ass over tea kettle. And I was in the middle of the stack. And They ran over me like I was freaking nothing. Probably with a smile on their face, bro.
Yeah, yeah.
Team guys, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Team guys, give you a kick, shit, man. They want you to mess
spit
up.
Spit some dip on you. I always thought that the Hilo lanyard, too, I wasn't convinced those even worked.
Did you feel the poor bastard try to find that out? I was always kind of hesitant myself.
That was, cause, and it seemed to me like a little extra time anyway. It's, I don't know. I was never crazy about this.
I don't know, dude. I'm weighing about 300 pounds. That doesn't look like it can cut the mustard.
And it's got those weird quick release. Like, at least make a carabiner out of it or something.
Had to be some joke with the pilots to get us to do that, some of that stuff, man.
Well, that could just be in your mind, too. You think you're safe. You should. I mean, you're probably not going to fall off, but you, I don't know.
Just to pull out a war perspective and put it in the overall cool concept, I remember the first time in Afghanistan when the helos had the doors off and we got to fly through the valleys, hanging out the bird.
Yeah.
That's kind of a...
That's cool.
That's a cool thing, man.
Well, the thing with
early helos, in the morning when it was real cold and stuff. It was
the thing with helos, though, is I don't care how many times you've been in, it's just cool.
It is.
They're just cool. It's hanging out the side of a 60, like some straight up Vietnam stuff. This is cool.
Like on the movies.
Yeah,
I felt it like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And then you look around all the boys. When we were going in, it was always dark, so I couldn't really see much. But on the way back out, like first in the breaking light, and you look at all the guys. And they get that look. They're just kind of staring out of the bird at the scenery. And you look at them like, God, dude, look at these motherfuckers, man. I don't know what they're thinking, but they look cool.
Yeah, that's
it. I would always think, like, dude, look at these things, man. They freaking look.
Part of the job is looking cool.
You look cool as shit, man.
I stopped wearing cami paint, though. I thought that was cool in Buds for like the first time. And then it's like, this kind of sucks. Then we had platoon chiefs that made us wear it all the time.
That was one of our SOPs you had to.
I had a West Coast platoon chief that wanted us to always carry 10 quarts of water. And I was like, you know, we have water purifiers.
Yeah, I feel like that was an Iraq thing too, man. Yeah,
it's a lot of weight. Well, I mean, Iraq's different, but this is like 1990s.
That's a lot.
Train,
man.
Like you train. It's a hell
of
a lot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that was what kind of got to us is we became combat ineffective. We were so heavy with what was in the ruck and then our armor and everything. Like, hey, look, if I get into a fight here, I'm too exhusted.
Yeah, it's too much stuff to be
carrying. It's too much stuff to move around.
Yeah, that's why, I mean, you got to carry.
I don't care what kind of shape you're in.
No, that's too big of a ruck to, especially, and you know this, how fast those dudes can move in the mountains. That is insane.
And that's something to watch them do that?
I was running an outstation in Assadabad, Afghanistan, which is like north of Jabad or whatever. It's up there in Indian country. And I had a dude with me who was a collegiate track guy. And one day on a boring day, we decided we're going to have a ram fight and we're going to eat shawarmas and then we're going to have a relay race up and down this hill. And this collegiate runner could not beat dudes in flip-flops.
Mm-mm.
I mean, and in a man dress.
Close, probably.
Not even close. Those dudes can run up that damn hill.
With their mouth closed.
Yeah. And they don't drink water. It's a different planet. I don't think people realize, like, before I went to Afghanistan the first time, and I asked a dude what it's like, he said, you got to see it. You won't believe. Yeah, you will not believe me.
Jurassic Park kind of deal, man. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got to see it to believe it.
We had a mission one time that one of the things we were doing, I heard some chatter from the locals. They were talking about, there's a fire-breathing dragon in the mountain, and he gets mad and he yells, and that's the thunder.
Mm.
And he, but every morning he wakes up and he spits a jewel in the sky, and that it's the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, the only way you can kill it is with a German-made B-52, which isn't a thing, but that's what they're saying, okay? Because they read it somewhere, or whatever. And so the locals, that's just folklore. Like you don't even know what you're taught. And so I went up to some bosses. I'm like, hey, I got an idea. Let's go tell these locals, if you tell us where the Taliban is, I guarantee you I will put the sun up every day and we'll kill the dragon. And my boss looked at me like, well, that's stupid. I'm like, but is it though? Like, if they believe me and the sun comes up, outside the box, baby.
Ultimate power. I tell people, man, it's possible to go back in time. There's a time remnant of people of every phase of life, I think, that we've been through. And if you go to the right place on the planet, you can find them.
Can find them. What was your first experience in Afghanistan? Other than the stench.
Okay, so I can smell. I know when I'm outside of Texas. Like I have that kind of nose. And bro, you're right, man. When they open that plane door in Afghanistan, Iraq, you can smell it.
Yeah, it's walking into an outhouse. It's 120 degrees Fahrenheit.
I never got over that. I mean, I never got used to it. I could always smell it.
You
don't get
used to it. You can smell it when you go to a concert and the shitters are full.
Yeah.
That's Afghanistan. You guys went to Bagram?
Yeah.
And what was the first part of Afghanistan like?
I landed there, I think it was pretty sure it was in the morning. Oh, the plane coming in. And some bitch didn't tell us where he was going to do that emergency kind of, and I never felt that before. When you slam against the skin of the aircraft, and then we landed, and the boys from 10 were waiting on us in the Hiluxes. Mm-hmm. And I remember we were sitting in that bowl of the mountains everywhere, and I was like, this is Afghanistan. I had my heebie-jeebies up, so I kind of was hunkered down. I thought I hadn't moved fast. My uniform was clean. It wasn't dirty, so I looked out of place.
Mm-hmm.
I remember everything I had a Texas flag labeled up on it. They took us straight in to the to Brian's camp.
Mm-hmm.
God, dude, what was his last name?
I don't remember.
It was hard to say. Camp Ouellette. Camp Brian Ouellette.
Camp Ouellette.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brian Ouellette.
Yeah. And remember that big gate?
Yeah.
It was right in the middle of the camp. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, I was like, well, man, this is what being a team guy is all about. This is where it starts.
That's when it got legit.
The guys rolled up with the beards.
Yes.
I thought that was the coolest. And they had that no-shave shit. Isn't that cool? That's cool to us, right?
Bro. Especially then, it was really cool.
And I mean,
cool.
This son of a bitch had a beard down to his chest. And he was talking to me. It was one of those typical team guy moments where he was an officer and I didn't know it. And he was still being cool to me. And I was kind of like, yeah, bro, this place is pretty cool, man. And he had his shades on and his cap. So I couldn't see anything. He was like Cousin It underneath that damn thing. Cool. He looked cool as shit. Has gun slung, had a t-shirt on. It was just, everything was kind of real chill. And then I remember a week later, he came walking up. He had shaved. I didn't even know who it was.
Oh, different guy?
Yeah, completely different dude. I was like, God, dog, man. And I was just getting mine, starting to grow it. I was like, I hope I get be here. It's typical team guy stuff. I was like, I hope I get to be here long enough to get this beard out.
Oh, that's all we cared about. When we got through Green Team, they let us start growing right then because we're going to deploy in a few months.
And when guys that aren't allowed to shave see the guys, they're like, oh, you're doing something cool. God, dude, what are you doing? I know you're doing something cool, man.
Play the part.
Damn it.
Every single time. And yeah, out in town.
Some of the guys can do it well. Mm-hmm. Like some of our guys can play the part freaking great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And we need them around to show us what we're supposed to look like.
Yeah. I started to learn too with the mountains. You got to, like we were talking about the heavy ass rucks, you got to cut weight. You got to start cutting your weight now. And we used to, when we deal with some army guys, we call them their space guns. Like you don't need all those optics and all that. You need your laser, you need your red dot.
Yeah.
And maybe a foregrip.
Hey, man, the longer we were there, the more bear, because we started to say, hey, man, what do they got?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you got a little harness with some mags in it. Actually, the kids had all the mags and follow them because you won't shoot a kid.
Not shooting the kid.
And he's just got that lidocaine pair of tennis shoes, and he's hauling ass through there like a billy goat. So think about that.
Yeah.
So that's when we started.
Well, yeah, and you got to realize, and you know more than anybody, that the speed, you got to have the speed.
Because
they have it. The one of the scariest things I've ever seen, and again, I'm not comparing it to Red Wings, but the first time I saw dudes moving laterally and like brown pajamas, like, fuck.
So that's when it got to me. When I'd fallen down pretty good ways, and they were moving in tandem through. As a matter of fact, I had a kind of an impressive moment. I was like, damn, that's pretty good. These two bitches are moving, dude. That happens to me. In the middle of a crazy moment, like, wow, they're doing pretty good. And I'll never forget that, how fast they were.
What I don't want to get into the story. You've told the story so many times. But what was the, well, obviously Red Wings, Lone Survivor, that first shot, because you know they're coming.
Yep.
You know they're there. They've already got what's that first? Is it like, okay, guys?
So we were set up in a diamond formation right off the top of the mountain, and I was looking up, and I'm talking from me to the ceiling is the distance between us, and I was on my glass, and there was this huge tree, and he had pulled, this guy, I saw the AK muzzle, came out the side of the tree, and then a guy come around, and he was hooded up. And then he pulled his head back around, and when he pulled his head back around, I looked underneath my armpit, like down at Mike, and said, get back on the clock, we're fixing to get it on. And I turned back around and waited, and you can see them moving and setting. I mean, they're right there. They weren't trying to.
How far?
I mean, 30 meters, maybe.
Jesus.
Was that tree? And then in the distance, it was over 100, because both canyon walls were on our right and left. And that son of a bitch pulled his head around that tree again and pulled the mag on when it is, when we started. And I remember I held my breath. The first time you do it, man, it's kind of like.
Yeah, I'm holding my breath right now listening.
My weapon was half and half, and I'll never forget the look on his friggin' face, man. And then it was on.
Oh, it just starts.
It started from my left because I took the first shot, man. When I did, it gets it. I was thinking it was going to come from up there, but it didn't. It came from the left side and started.
Well, they're setting up on you.
Yeah, they're setting up on us. And then once that happened, we tried to push to the right, and then they set up on us on the right, so they pushed us back in the middle. And then we weren't on the high ground anymore. And then the ground started breaking out from underneath us. And like a freaking trap door. I mean, it was so hard to trying to claw up back to a space where you think you could set down and you fall back down. You're trying to shoot and get shot at, dude. I started looking at all the other guys, how they were dealing with it, man. And you just couldn't, you'd flip over another guy. God, dog, it was crazy. And that lasted for a couple hundred meters. And it was dirt. And we were in a tree forested area. Like, there was a lot of trees. We kept hitting, trying to stop ourselves on the tree. Like, you'd kind of step up and grab this thing, but then you'd have to fight and move around. You'd flip out of there again. And then it bottlenecked. And I thought about this in a while. And there's a bunch of huge boulders. And it was a logging area. Like, the limbs and stuff had been cut off all the trees, and they were laying down in this all through there. And then when we flipped into that sucker, what we thought was that grass area, we hit those rocks. Oh, dude, that's when it started sucking.
Hitting the rocks?
Yeah, hitting those rocks, man.
Yeah. It sounds to me like it sucked from the beginning.
Yeah, it did.
I don't think people understand, too, the because, you know, the movie's outstanding, but the mountains aren't as steep in the movie as they are in Afghanistan. Like, that.
Dude, the freaking.
You can't describe those mountains.
And it's the things that they did you couldn't do to the actors that happened to us that would make it really suck. Like, I remember biting my tongue in half, and Mikey's mouth was full of blood, too, because our teeth were all black. I remember sitting there, because every now and again, we'd get to where we could get together and try to formulate a plan of what we were going to do, but we'd be missing somebody. So then we'd have to double back, and then I remember Murph sitting there, man. I was, goddamn, bro, I was sitting on my butt, my hands on my knees, and I was just like, I was breathing so hard, it was hot. I just remember my lungs, I never felt that. And I was like, hey, you know, it was, I guess, that thin burning air, and you could smell. Oh, the ground was on fire. And that was another thing that kept happening. You just run through the damn RPG blast and catch the ground on fire. And, man, you look over, and Murph's teeth were freaking, his mouth full of blood, and he was trying to talk to me, and I was like, hey, man, you got some shit.
Jesus.
I was like, oh, wait, what's that? And the same thing about your tongue kept sticking to the roof of your mouth. It was like talking to a dregger. When you were talking about that earlier, talking to a dregger,
yeah,
that's what was happening to us. And so we couldn't communicate because you couldn't speak. And then everybody's gear had been, you know, gypsy camped all over the damn mountain because the fall was just.
Well, you're jumping off cliffs.
They were jumping off all these rocks and trying to jump onto a tree and hold onto it and fire them pole down. I mean, it was something, man.
I mean, what? You got to jump off a cliff. Like, you're trying to. I got to negotiate this. I don't have time. What? You aim for the tree? There's no soft spot.
Yeah, there's a couple. No. There wasn't. And I remember a couple of times I was like trying to make it to luckily they trained, like the O course kind of kept popping in my head. Mm-hmm. The rolling log, there was an actual example of that, and I was running down it, and this is what happened to me. I fell off of it, and my helo lanyard grabbed a limb, and I was stuck hanging from it, just dangling from it. That happened to me.
Shitting me.
Nope. Talking about that helo lanyard, I forgot about that.
No.
And then I fell into this little crevice. And then they were freaking starting jamming us up, and then you could hear the fight shift, so they would see another one. Because they kept losing sight of us, because inside the canyon, we'd duck behind these rocks, and we'd stay stationary for a little bit, but then another guy would move. We were bounding, and which I think ultimately saved our lives for a while.
Yeah.
All the bounding movements. But it just got so intense. And once they came up from underneath us in the village.
Oh, I didn't know that part.
Yeah, they came up from underneath, and once that happened.
Jesus.
Then I remember I was jammed in these rocks. My legs were kind of mangling. Kind of leaning back like that, and I buried myself, and the sun was going down. It was getting dark. I didn't know which way to go. I could hear that stream running. I was so thirsty. I didn't have any water. All that stuff had been ripped off of me. But I kept thinking, I was like, well, I can't drink out of it because my buddies are in it.
Jesus.
And they were upstream in it. We were fighting through that damn stream left and right. You got to run across it, and just between me and you, no one else will get this besides a team guy. I remember when I ran through the stream, my feet got wet. I was like, damn it. It was just one boot.
Well, something bad just happened.
Oh, all right, time out. Murph, I got my boot wet, dude. I mean, this is ridiculous. Yeah, that kind of stuff
would happen. That is funny. That's the torture of buds because I don't want to get wet.
You don't get wet.
You got a foot wet getting shot, but now it got bad.
And then it got to the point where it was just kind of moving because your body's moving. Like you're out of breath and you're trying to move. It was just one of those moments when I finally fell into that little deal. I was just so exhausted. I'd never been that tired. God dang.
The tired and the thirst has got to be insane.
Yeah, that's what actually got me up and moving. Because I was so freaking thirsty. Like something happens. There's a pain that goes with it. And I mean, once that damn thing hits you, bro, I was drinking my urine. I my hands were so cut up. Oh God, it sucked, man. I was trying to do anything to take my mind off of what. There are certain things that happen to the human body. Like when it gets hungry, I don't care what you're doing. Mm-hmm. If somebody gets hungry, that's what they're focusing on.
Yeah,
the body takes control, and thirst is the worst. And that dry mouth, because I couldn't. My tongue kept sticking to the roof of my mouth, and I would try and pull it out of there. I mean, this is the calamities of war, I guess. And then I didn't know which direction I was going. It was so dark. And I kept falling. And there was a couple of times there. I know you were going to ask me this, man. But like, hey, man, when was that breaking point? And I was like, okay. I was laying down and the cloud cover kind of cleared up. And there was this tree on the side of the mountain. Remember Predator when he crawls into that tree? Mm-hmm. Out of the thing? Mm-hmm. It looked like that. Mm-hmm. And I was just kind of laying there on my back. My legs, I couldn't feel those, man. And I was like, God, I about had enough of this, man. I was like, I don't know what, I about had enough, man. I was like, if you get me out of here, I'll straighten my ass up, you know. I didn't think I was too far out of line. You know, SEALs, we're allowed to get off chain a little bit. And sure enough, he got me. I thought, it took him a long time to get me back.
Oh, shit.
Another week out there. But...
My God.
Yeah, there was a point.
That's another week, yeah.
Yeah, another week out there.
I can't, I mean, just being there at the same time as you, but not in even close to what you're going through, on the mountains, simply just walking up. We had dudes, like, because it wasn't all SEALs. We had everyone.
Everyone's there, yeah.
And we had, like, dudes, I remember one dude took his med pack off and just dropped it. He can't carry it anymore. And one guy said, well, I want to quit. I'm like, well, where the fuck are you going to go? You got nowhere to go. You're here, dude.
Can't call nobody.
Yeah.
Everybody else was trying to do their own thing. Yeah. And I mean, and this isn't a shot at the guys who fell out.
No.
Because when the guys finally did make it in there, there weren't very many of them, and they were beat to shit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I still keep in touch with a lot of them, man. And that was the most impressive thing when they found me. I was like, look at you, hard some bitches, yeah. Man. I couldn't believe it.
We were on the, this is coming down into the Shuri.
Yeah.
We were coming down. And we were having, because we'd been up a couple of days too, just walking. Again, we're not in it. We called some A-10s, whatever. I remember having a conversation. One of the guys sat down and said, I got to sit down. I can't go anymore. And I said to them, good. You just tell Mrs. Luttrell that we didn't get him because you quit. And he goes, you're right. And I said, do me a favor. Give me that exact same speech. I don't think I can go anymore.
Yeah, send it back.
Yeah, I need to hear that.
Yeah, man.
And then we got the radio call that, yeah, someone just made it in there. And we're like, good. And then now that it's over, we're like, where the fuck did we go? It's right. Over. We got to get out of here now.
That was a crazy thing.
We're driving.
And this is where I haven't told anybody this, man, but if I ever had a chance to get Peter Berg to do an alternate ending to the movie, mm-hmm. and put in what y'all had to go through to get me, to get us out of there, all of us, that's the craziest story. And just the fact going up into that gauntlet you want to talk about sticking me into the worst place ever to come get me?
The worst place.
Worst place.
The briefs we were getting was there's families in these valleys that have lived there for 10, 20,000 years, and they've never met. And if you try to go in their valley, they're going to cut someone's head off and put it on a stake. You're not welcome.
Star Wars, like with the sand people? Yeah, they kind of like that, man. Like they stand off on the canyon walls and pop shots at each other. It's like that. It's way back land.
We had funny shit going on, too. They wouldn't fly us in at first for obvious reasons. Yeah. And when we finally, I don't know how many hours into the hike, they said they're going to airlift us some water, and these 60s came in and they missed us and they dropped these. They're just throwing them out just right off a cliff. We're like, well, we could have used that. We had a donkey jump because when donkeys get to a spot where it's enough, they'll kill themselves.
Yeah.
We had a donkey jump off and he didn't pick a cliff that was high enough to kill him.
Oh,
he simply picked a cliff that was high enough to make him realize he made a bad decision.
Yeah.
So now you're just down there. It's like, what the fuck?
That's where that word came from.
And we're not even getting shot at. I can't. I mean, when you try to describe, when I said, because people ask me about the movie Lone Survivor all the time, and I'm like, excellent movie, but the mountains just aren't the same. And those actors would have died if they were.
That's what when the guys talk to me from there, they're like, man, you know, that was the one thing you couldn't capture.
No, you can't.
That's how bad that sucked.
And I can't imagine, too, just with my experience in gunfights, too, because I had a couple more dudes, but just the watching them and then hearing the AKs and the PKs and the RPGs, man, they're not like in Red Dawn with the, no, these things are there.
Yeah, because you're in the canyon, too, so even if it misses you, it backblasts those tree, the freaking trees that have been chopped down, man.
Some of those impacts, instead of hearing it, I'd almost rather just hit me.
Man.
That obviously Lone Survivor, everyone should have seen the movie and read the book. What do you do after? Because we and I were talking a bunch of healing stuff, and we.
I got back once I got back, I did the Germany route to the hospital, and then I actually came back to the States, and then they redeployed me back to Bahrain. So I made it to Hawaii, mm-hmm. to the hospital there. I think for 2 weeks, and then they put me back on a transport plane. I went to Bahrain. The rest of the guys had come back in out of Iraq because they had split us down the middle. Mm-hmm. Half went to Iraq, half went to Afghanistan. And then I came back with them, and I got to see my family after that. So it was and that might have lasted 2 weeks, bro. And then we got orders to Team 5. So actually, they were trying to move me to Team 2.
Mm-hmm.
Because they want to be real, they want to be close to the Pentagon and all that. If you know how this works, part.
Well, yeah, this
is good. You know where I'm going with this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So everybody was, and I'll hand it to, when they sent me to 5, because they were next on the block too. Mm-hmm. They were going into Ramadi. And then I remember my brother was at STVs with me, and he was in a platoon doing a workup. And my orders came through that I was going to over to 5. And some of the guys were like, man, it's going to be, you know, but you're leaving your brother out here, man. That's kind of a big deal. I was like, oh, he'll be going with me. And they're like, no, you don't break. That is not possible. Mm-hmm. You know, he's in the middle of something. I was like, no, he'll be going with me. It was the only thing I asked for. The Admiral asked me if he could grant my one wish. What would it be? I was like, can my brother stay with me? And he's like, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget the look on the Warren's face when those orders came through from my freaking brother. He's like, who do you know?
Well.
I'm like, hey, how about that? I got one silver bullet. I burned it on my brother, man. And so we went out to 5 and fell in right into the workup. And at first, I wasn't supposed to be. God, I was going through all this. I was in the hospital still and having all these surgeries. And they stacked that Ramadi platoon with the hardest dudes. I mean, it was the best time. It was the best deployment. Mm-hmm. I was beat to shit. I was in a leadership role. I mean, I got to go outside the wire a few times, but LPOs kind of deal. Mm-hmm. And the guys were great, man. So I just hid out there.
Yeah.
And we were there for 7 months, I think. It was hard. Like, all the guys got hit and wounded, man. We didn't lose. It was the same spot Chris Kyle got.
Yeah.
All his stuff. And Mark Lee and all them died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jeez.
And then they got back to command. This is when it started for me, man. They're like, hey, as soon as you get back, man, it's on. Oh, we're sitting at the chow hall in Ramadi. One of the guys in my platoon goes, hey, man, there's a book out about your story. And it had the cover online. I didn't know what online was. I didn't know what MySpace was and all that stuff like that. And so MySpace, the younger guys were into all that. Like, mm-hmm. Shane, all them, they could find anything on the internet. I wasn't into that.
Mm-hmm.
And then that came up. And that's when I first got so guys are probably going to know about it. Because I was told to keep it top secret.
That's coming out. You're not.
And they told me that too. And they trained me for everything. And that was one of the coolest things, man. So when I got back, I got to go hang out with Admiral McGuire over at Warcom. Mm-hmm. He was my shadow, my top cover. And I mean, I actually got a Warcom badge. How about that?
Nicely
done.
You
believe that?
Yeah, you made it.
I made it. And I'll never forget these politicians and all these people would come over and do a dog and pony, would call the team, and Master Chief Naschek, he would always answer the phone.
I know who he is.
And, great dude. And he would freaking hammer there. He's like, you think you're more important than America and training my Navy SEALs? He watched out for me like you couldn't believe, man. Well, then, bro, they gave me some freaking media training and started sending me through all these schools to get me ready to start going on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And then they sent my ass to New York in a suit, pulled me out of my uniform, like, hey, here's your new uniform, put the suit on. Here's your agents. They gave me my lawyers, all my publishing, everything. They facilitated all of that.
Really?
It was an assignment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
which I didn't know what to do. I never even heard of anybody having to do that. But then someone's like, hey, you know, independent operator seals, y'all do everything. So this is part of it. And then they just put me on the road. And that was my new job.
Recruiting.
Recruiting, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's quite a change, too. And that's it's everything turned, like, when, like, that's the whole, you want to make God laugh, tell him what your plan is.
Then it's for tomorrow. So this is when the hardest I ever been hit coming out of SEAL teams was this. And there wasn't anybody there to hit me. I had one of my bags. I was leaving the team, last one out, right? The door shut behind me, and I left one of my para bags inside the fence, mm-hmm. and I went to scan my ID to get back in. It wouldn't open.
Yeah. Are you kidding me?
It went from a team guy to a piece of shit. And
that's the whole.
I just felt like one. You know what
I mean? Oh, I know. Yeah.
No one said anything to me, but it was just like, I can't even get my bag.
I was here. You know me. I heard dudes, and that's the thing though. That it's a train moving 100 miles an hour. You stay on as long as you want. Once you hop off, it's over. It's
gone. It gets better too because the guys were walking by. I was like, "Hey, I need help with my bag." Like, "Can we help you, sir?"
You're shitting me.
Yeah, they gave me that one. I'm like, "Oh yeah, we're already there." Like,
that's where we're at.
This is a secure area, sir. And I was like, "All right." I wasn't even out of the freaking military, man.
Oh, but
that's how they did it. And it was cool, man. No paddles, no nothing. Just like deuces.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it, man. And I would rotate back through. Navy commissioned everything. All my flights, everything, where I stayed. They took care of everything. All the way up until the movie was out and done. And then once all that completed, then I was done.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
And that was a whirlwind, too, when the movie came out. Because when I ran into you in New York, we did a private screening, and I think you just flown in from Japan.
Yeah, how about that?
Just so we could meet up.
Yeah, they sent me down to Japan and a couple other places.
It's quite a flight.
It is. Bro, like on the way back, Mel thought she was going to die from the mm-hmm. jet lag. Because we're only for a couple days.
Yeah.
Now, if you go down in there and hang out, that's different. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had a good time, saw Godzilla in the harbor, tried to find a samurai sword, did the whole thing the team guy would do, right? And then we came back, and Peter Berg and Mark Wahlberg and all those guys, I mean, they were great. I mean, I got blessed with that crew do that because of what we did. I mean, your story in itself, I try to tell people ask about you all the time to me. I'm like, hey, man, imagine being the one guy who shot Hitler. I mean, you're talking about Rob. I mean, that's a hand selection by the Almighty. Like, he's one who got tasked with that. That could have been any of us.
Oh, yeah.
Could have been freaking any of us. He got one picked to do that. There's a weight that comes with that.
Big time.
A huge weight that if you've never seen him have to carry it, it's unbelievable. And the only reason I know it is because of the weight I have to carry.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm on the opposite end of it. We were on the beatdown side. Like, you represent what it's like when we kick everyone's ass. I represent what happens when we get our asses kicked. I was like, but there's a weight that goes along with that. And we're not trained in that in the beginning.
No, not even a little bit. Well, because we were, again, talking earlier, and my plan was to be a master chief and then be a buds instructor.
Well, that's probably one of the best conversations you and I ever had, because that was my plan
along. What I'm going
to
do.
I wanted to be that crusty-ass master chief, freaking bury me under the grinder.
Yeah, kick-ass mustache.
Fucking kick-ass mustache.
Yeah.
Nope, wasn't in the cards, man. So.
And it happened so fast, too. For me, it was simply because the guy in front of me decided to go straight, which means I need to go right. That's it. He goes right, I go straight.
When you saw that son of a bitch's face, man, what was the first thing you kind of did?
I thought he was skinny. Skinny was the first.
You didn't recognize him?
I saw his nose. So that's him.
Check. Yeah.
And it was skinny. He's wearing white, tall. And
he's big, right?
6'3". Tall, 6'4", about. Yeah.
6'4", yeah.
And Amal was right there, and it was just I'm 2 feet away from him. So she's 5'2", and he's 6'4".
When you walked that door, was the light up? Could you see?
No, I was on nuts.
Okay, check.
Yeah. So and there might have been some backlighting some way because we did see through the curtain at the top of the stairs some people moving, which is why the point man went straight, and that's why I went right. But when I saw him, it was just it's him. And I mean, even before, it's like, okay, he's up there, and we got to go because we wanted. I was waiting for four. I wanted two more dudes. I wanted four more, but I'll take two. But then we had to go because we only had 23 guys total.
Everybody know that Hilo went down?
Not until we got in the house. I had to be told. I thought they did
really,
a
really, man. Yeah. It didn't make that much noise.
I heard them saying dash one going around. They were saying dash one going down. And then when our Hilo pilot let us out,
how about that for marble mouth? What'd he say?
Well, then they put us down and we were going to the roof. And then this pilot went back down because he saw it. Didn't make sense to me. And I was like, well, I guess we're starting the war from here for some reason. But but again, like you said, you just you do your thing. You the tactics happen, and then all of a sudden it That's how fast it was. And I had a dude come into me, and he had to say, are you good? I'm like, yeah, what do we do?
Oh, that fast.
What do we do now? And he goes, now we find the computers. You do this every night. I said, yeah, you're right. And he, holy shit. And he goes, yeah, killed Osama bin Laden. Your life just changed. Get to work.
That's what he said to you? And then it went back to normal routine?
Yeah. Find the stuff, SSE.
Yeah.
Now we can leave. Let's call in that 47 because we got to blow up the 60.
When did that set in?
Right after.
I know it didn't happen while you were there.
Well, it sort of did, but we're getting out. When it really hit me was...
I'm talking about when that somebody hits you. Like when everyone else is coming in with that look on their face.
When we're on the 46. Well, because everyone was asking. Everyone even in the house, who got him?
And
it was funny because my nickname was
Nez. Bro, I get chills thinking about it because you know how guys are like, who the hell did it?
And it was funny because I was known for telling jokes and my nickname was Nizro, Navy SEAL Rob O'Neill. And they go, who got him? They go, Nizro. They go, fuck, we're never going to hear the end of this.
But, why would you, man? That's one of our greatest.
But the flight out hit me because we're on the 47 trying to get back, and this dude so SEAL Team 6 in the Army rescued SEAL Team 6. So there's Blue Team guys here now, and this dude next to me from
it was Blue that got y'all.
Blue Team, they won't let you live that down. No. Well, we went into their space. They should have taken the mission. We went in there, so they were gracious. This dude's next to me, and he goes, he's from Manhattan. He goes, who got him? And I said, I did. And he goes, on behalf of my family, thank you. And then the guy next to me here is our sniper that initiated the fire to rescue Richard Phillips. He handed me his dip, and he goes, take one of mine. Now you know what it's like to be a fucking hero. I'm like, holy shit, guys. It's like, let's just get home. But
when a team guy gives you some praise, that's a little different story altogether.
Don't worry, it only lasted about 5 minutes.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't last long. And very, very rare do you get it, but when you do, you remember it for sure.
So, but then, again, just thrust into it and and again, it doesn't matter what your plan is. Something else is going to happen.
Let me tell you something. I'll never forget when y'all did that. I was laying in bed with the missus, and we were kind of, my phone started kind of blowing up a little bit and mowing over. And then I got text message like, hey, did you kill bin Laden? I was like, yes.
Of course I did.
And just for the record, when I was single and out and about and everything, like if anybody ever asked me if I did, of course, that's team guy etiquette. Every team guy was the one that got rescued. Every team guy shot bin Laden.
Yep.
That's the way we do business. Now, if you got us on a witness stand and we got to come out with the truth, that's different.
Way different.
Yeah. But if we're out and about in a bar or whatever and you ask, hey, man, just be ready for what you get.
Well, I heard some dude in a bar saying he killed bin Laden. It's like, did he hook up? Yeah, well, then good on him.
Good on him. But somebody sent me the other day. I was like, hey, man, I found this freaking Instagram of you. He's got a lot of followers. And it wasn't me, obviously. You know, like, I'm like, hey, man, is he doing good? Let him do it.
Yeah.
No, that's fine with me.
That's good. Well, and I think they're just putting positive energy out there, too. Whatever. Doesn't matter.
You know, team guys, man, we don't worry about that kind of crap. There's other stuff that we get twisted on that's kind of stupid, but not that.
That's funny stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I let me tell you something. The longer I was out, especially when I got by myself, I would kind of assimilate to wherever it was they put me. So I'd forget that I'm a team guy sometimes. I would just kind of, you know what I mean? And what I mean by that is the confidence part. Like, hey, never forget what you are.
Yeah, that's
what
true.
You've been trained to, what you
yes,
can take.
Yes, that's very true.
Because I think when team guys get out, they'll immediately, because you can't act like that, like we do. I'm seeing it's a hard rub when we get out to assimilate back in.
Yes,
it's freaking really difficult, man.
The tough part for me was realizing now, I thought everyone had my back, like in the teams, that not necessarily when you get out.
That ain't nothing personal, man. They can't.
No.
I remember calling the guys and the ones that wouldn't answer, the ones that would answer, you can tell they even want to talk because they had something going. That was hard to deal with. It's nothing personal either.
No.
I remember I was probably the king of that. It's like when guys get onto us about, I was like, hey man, what are you talking about SEAL teams for? I was like, it's my job, first of all. But when I was in, I was the one that didn't. You know what I mean? I remember that. So it's funny the direction that you get pushed in, but I mean, our guys are across the board on everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that's what makes us unique.
Master of none.
And I've been spending trying to track down more and more of the team guys to find out what they're doing when they get out. And that's the blessing.
Yes.
Like, I knew you when you were in. What are you doing now? Like, some of our doctors.
I know.
I mean, when they're like, you're a doctor? I don't know if that's a good idea, man. We got them, bro.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. When did people start recognizing you?
Right around I did a Fox News special.
Is that what started?
Yeah. I wanted to, I donated a shirt to the museum, the memorial in Manhattan. And, but that's when I was introduced to the families.
The 9/11 one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the families really appreciated that, putting a real name and a real face with the healing process. And because I helped 30 people in a room, this was the first time I talked to people about it. I realize if I tell the story, I can probably help more people with the healing, because 9/11 was the worst day of their lives.
There was no way they weren't going to know about you.
Yeah. I mean, my name was out.
It was all over the news.
Before I got back. But yeah, and again, I mean, it's been good. It's been fine. Most people have been great. So it is what. I mean, it's weird though, going from no one's ever gonna know who I am to getting recognized at a coffee shop.
Well, they know. Well, we were trained up to know more about people.
Yes, right.
Than they knew about us, and mm-hmm. It switched on us.
Mm-hmm. Now it's the whole. Now it's like, do you remember
it's
me?
Completely different.
Where did I meet you?
Yeah,
2015.
And the most fun you'll ever have in New York City is if you patch up with the police, the firefighters.
Oh, dude, yes, yeah.
I almost forgot my name when I was there. That's how much fun we have.
Yeah,
and think you know what that is, but they're like, let me show you the city.
Uh-huh.
And without the wife and kids, man, I would just sleep at the firehouses and get up and be like, hey, man, let's get some breakfast. Or just,
nice.
And then
nice.
That was one of the coolest things when I started having to do the book. When that was the first thing that got me. So they let me hang out in New York, but obviously I had chaperones. And then Mikey and a couple of team guys, they have family that were in the firehouse or in the fire department and everything. Mm-hmm. You know, New York, that's a lineage thing.
Oh, yeah.
They're all legacy, and they switch.
Seriously, yeah.
We don't know that down south about everybody up north, man. Y'all keep that stuff secret.
Right, yeah.
But then when you finally make it up there and get past their armor, and they're like, hey, man, let me show you around.
Mm-hmm. It's a good. Like it's good.
That's when you get to see it.
Uh-huh.
God bless them, man. I freaking love it up there.
It's fun up there, too. They got the hockey game, the NYPD FDNY hockey game.
Yeah,
and there's huge fights. It's like, well, they do that every day anyway.
Well, man.
This is nothing new.
That's normal.
Yeah, they're fine.
We don't get to see this kind of stuff. That's why it's so much fun coming up there to hang out.
Yeah, good dudes. Yeah.
And I had, mine was a Today Show.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
That's when they sent me out.
And that was your first live
that
interview?
That was my first anything.
Live's tough. The first one.
I was kind of nervous.
Yeah.
They put me in a suit. I was in the green room. You know, Zuckerberg was back there.
Really?
Yeah, Mark. Facebook was just coming out, so he was kind of doing his thing. Mm-hmm. And it was me and him and somebody else. I didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
I had no idea. And I sat down out there, and that was when it happened. And then when I walked out, we started.
Oh, yeah. That's you're done after that.
And
yeah.
It was – I wish I could remember all – all, it was amazing. The people were great. I mean, I can't thank New York City, man, for all that. And then the way I got passed around, of course, spend more time in bookstores than I ever did growing up. You know,
right,
Barnes & Noble,
right.
Back when you get them at the store and stuff like that. And it just got to really see America. And that's when I really started appreciating this place.
New York City's awesome because that's one place that they truly never forget.
They don't.
They're legit up there.
I got to wear, I was in, they put me in my uniform the first time up there. So I strutted around. That's a big deal.
Oh, wow. In the city?
In the city.
Okay, that's good.
And New Yorkers will come out of their armor and their shell to say something to you if you're in your uniform.
Mm-hmm. They will. That's,
they will do that.
They have Fleet Week up there for a reason.
Yeah. They will look up off their phones and they will say something to you if you're sporting your uniform, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what we got to do? Way too much for this episode. We got to do this again and talk about the treatment we're here for, the Ibogaine stuff.
Yeah, man, I can't do it
today. We got to, like, I just proved it's an easy flight to Texas.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming down, man.
This has been awesome because I've been able to collaborate with Team Never Quit, Operator Podcast, Marcus Luttrell, always awesome, man. This is and I think I stole "You're Never Out of the Fight" from you guys, but that's my conclusion, man.
That's good.
Never out of the fight.
Yeah, brother. Good job, man. Thanks.
Awesome.
Hell yes.